This message, titled Asking for Wisdom from James chapter 1, verse 5, was preached at Winchester Reformed Presbyterian Church in Winchester, Kansas. For more information, visit us at winchesterrp.com.
Well, brothers and sisters, I'm eager to get to the content of the message this morning, and so I don't want to begin by prolonging an introduction, except to rehearse once again a little bit of where we find ourselves in this letter of James. James is writing to Christians who are scattered throughout the known world into many regions and into many nations. Christians who were dispersed very likely through the hand of persecution, being driven from their homes and being driven from the comforts and the safeties that they knew. And James begins this letter, as we have seen in previous weeks, at the very end of verse 1 by telling them, greetings, a word that actually comes with a commanding force, a word that means be cheerful. And of course, you can imagine that as James puts his pen to the paper to write to these people, one of the instinctive arguments, or you might say objections, that they would bring to James is, how can we be cheerful? How can we be cheerful as we have been scattered and dispersed from our homes, from our families, from our friends? How can we be cheerful as we are living among the nations in a society and culture that is hostile and inhospitable to the glorious truths of Christianity? You can almost hear that objection rising from their hearts. It is almost tempting to let it rise from our own. And so James jumps right in, you might say. And he begins by telling these to whom he's writing and telling us that if we are to find cheer and gladness in this world, then it's going to begin here. We need to count all of our trials. We need to think of all of the trials of faith that we endure in this life as a means of producing a joy in our hearts that cannot be taken. And James writes that, as we have seen previously, with brotherly sympathy, to encourage them to this end, to encourage them that the trials that they face, those trials that test their faith, are actually trials with a tremendous purpose. And the purpose is to bring about in their lives, as we have seen, this chain of events. These trials are intended to produce patience. And patience is intended to work in our lives, and we are to let patience work in our lives so that we might be brought to maturity, so that we might be made whole, so that we might, as James says there at the end of verse 4, lack in nothing. And now we come to this fifth verse, where James says, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given to him. We come now to an exhortation from James that we are to pray for wisdom. And we are to pray for wisdom because, as is very obvious in the reading of that verse, we are to pray for it because God graciously gives it. I want to work out in detail something of what James says here by noticing three things in verse 5. The first thing that we'll focus on is James notes that all of us lack something. All of us have, you might say, a deficiency. What is the deficiency? We don't have wisdom. We lack wisdom. James, and we'll see this in the second place this morning, tells us that there is a means of attaining wisdom. What is that means? Very simply, we are to ask God for it. And James concludes, which will be our third point this morning, a guarantee that when we ask God for wisdom, we will get it. Why? Because God is generous. So I want to think on these words this morning under those three points, a deficiency, a means, and a guarantee. And so looking at the text today, you'll notice first the deficiency. The deficiency. James writes in verse 5, if any of you lacks wisdom. Now I want to pause here for a moment. You know, one of the greatest challenges sometimes in reading the Bible is reading in order to understand. It would be easy in one sense to just lift verse 5 out of the context and to say, well, here's a nice little piece of advice. Here's a good Christian motto to live by. If anyone lacks wisdom, let him ask God. And it would be easy to lift it from the context of this letter and just use it in that way. Well, one of the greatest challenges to studying and to understanding the letter of James is coming to terms, you might say, with James's flow of thought. One of the greatest challenges in reading this letter is putting together, you might say, the logical order of his thoughts. Is James one who, as he writes this letter, is just giving us random, pithy little sayings here and there that have no context and no rhyme and reason to them? Or does this letter, as James writes it, does it come with a certain logic? And you will find, if you read the scholars and you read the commentators who take time to write on this, that is not an easy question to answer. It is not an easy question to answer. What is the outline of this letter? What is the logical order of James as he writes? And we will see more and more as we go through this letter that discovering an answer to that is not very easy. But I want you to notice that here there is a flow of thought. That there is a connection to what James is writing in verse 5 with what he has already said. And we have to ask the question, well, what is that flow of thought? Why is it that as James writes about these various trials in our lives that are intended to produce patience, and as we let patience have its full effect, that it will make us mature and it will make us whole so that we're lacking nothing, why then suddenly in verse 5 does James launch, you might say, into this discussion on wisdom? What is his rhyme? What is his reason? Well, we see that James is connecting his thoughts. In verse 5, if any of you lacks wisdom. And of course, if you just cast your eye for a moment back to verse 4, you see that James uses the same word. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. And now he writes, if any of you lacks wisdom, here's what you need to do. And it cues us in, brothers and sisters, to this. That what James is writing in verses 5 and following is not a brand new thought. James has not now gotten off the topic of how we face various trials in our lives. In fact, we see that this is the dominant theme right through verse 12. Where he says, blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial. So what is his flow? What is his logic? Why does James tell us that if we let patience have its full effect, we will be lacking nothing, but if we lack wisdom? What is the logic? Well, if I can put it this way this morning, the logic is found here. It's found in James's pastoral heart. James knows that what he is writing is not an easy truth. James knows that what he has just put to paper in verses 2 through 4 is not an easy thing. Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. Brothers and sisters, James knows that this is hard. He knows that when it comes to the details of our lives, when this is our living reality, that what he says here is not something that is easy. You know, in one sense, I think it's fair to say this morning that all of us could look at verses 2 through 4, and at least in a cognitive way, we could say, well, it makes sense, I get it. Yep, various trials. If I meet with them in the road to life, they're intended to test my faith. They're gonna have a benefit in my life. I get that in one sense here. It's easy. Can I put it this way this morning? Sometimes it's very easy for the head to understand while the heart struggles. And James knows, because he has a pastor's heart, that when we are faced with trials of all kinds, many of us, probably all of us, do not respond the way he has told us to respond. Rather, we are so often plagued by questions. We are perplexed and confused. We fear the trials we meet with, and they cause tremendous anxiety in our lives, despite knowing in our heads what God says here. Our hearts can be very slow, you might say, to catch up. And why is that? James tells us it's because we lack wisdom. It's because we are deficient in wisdom, the great deficiency. And the way in which James actually words this, he puts it somewhat gently. He puts it subtly, if any of you lacks wisdom. But the real force behind what James is writing is stronger than that. Not this hypothetical, if this happens to be you, but James, in a gentle but pastoral way, is saying, here's the reality of most of our lives. When we face trials of various kinds, we are deficient in wisdom. We are deficient in wisdom. And I want you to know this morning that James doesn't mean that as an insult. He doesn't mean it as an insult, but it's helpful to think in terms that he's really just observing what is true of our hearts. I remember when I was in basic training. Surprisingly to me, I knew nothing about basic training before I went, and surprisingly to me, we spent hours in the classroom. We spent hours in those 12 weeks of basic training in the classroom, poring over textbooks that taught us the ins and the outs of warfare, strategies and tactics, and this is what this is for, and this is what that is for. And we learned it in the classroom, and we got tested on it, and many of us would score high. They weren't the world's most difficult tests. But I remember our sergeants telling us again and again, it's one thing to learn this in the classroom. It's going to be a whole other thing when you're in the field and when you're dealing with the reality of what we are trying to teach you. And you're going to learn in those moments how difficult these things actually are. I remember as a seminary student. As a seminary student, we were often warned that our years in seminary, in being trained for the pastorate, would be years spent in an ivory tower, where we could have all kinds of fun theological discussions about hypotheticals, and what about this, and what about that. And our pastors and our professors that came alongside of us, warning us that when you get into the pastoral ministry, there's no more ivory tower. The boots are on the ground, and you are going to be dealing with real people in real lives and real situations. And the reality of things becomes much harder. Can I use those illustrations to just say that's what James is observing? In one sense, it is something for our heads to grasp the idea that we ought to count it all joy when we face trials, because God's got a purpose. But it's so different when we look those trials in the eye and we meet them on the road of life. And James is saying, for all intents and purposes, this is what's going to happen when you get out of the ivory tower. When you get out of just thinking about these things to living the reality of it, you are going to see that you lack wisdom. James isn't saying this to insult us. James is saying this because he understands our hearts. And he knows that all of us, as we come across various trials and tests of faith in this life, he knows that all of us are going to find in those moments that we lack wisdom. Why? Because, to put it this way this morning, brothers and sisters, trials have a way of exposing to us and showing us our deficiencies. Trials have a way of exposing to us how much wisdom we lack. And so James immediately adds, if any of you lacks wisdom. Now, what does James mean by that? If this is the great deficiency in the midst of all of our trials, that our trials make us come to terms with the fact that we're not as wise as we think we are, we don't have the wisdom that we need, what does James mean by wisdom? Well, simply defined this morning, James really intends wisdom, and the Bible intends wisdom, really, if you want to look at it from two angles. Wisdom is, first and foremost, it is the skill to know God's will. Wisdom is the skill to know God's will, to have understanding and insight into what the will of God is as he has revealed it. If we were to go back to Proverbs chapter 2, in Proverbs chapter 2, verses 6 through 7, Solomon says, "The Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding." And so the first angle in understanding what wisdom is the skill to know God's will, to know his word, to have an understanding and a knowledge of it, and a persuaded knowledge that this is God's will. But the second angle of wisdom, it is not simply the skill to know God's will, but as we have it here in our text and throughout the letter of James, it is the skill to know God's will, but it is also, brothers and sisters, it is the skill of doing God's will. To not just know it, but to do it, to walk in it. We read this morning from Proverbs chapter 3, where Solomon encourages his son. In Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 and 6, "Don't lean on your own understanding, but in all of your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths." Solomon is saying, here's a principal part of wisdom is to walk in the will of God. To not only know it, but to do it. And you see, what James is saying as he comes to it is he's saying, here's the very thing we lack. Here's where you and me and all of us are deficient when it comes to our trials. We lack wisdom. We lack the skill to truly know and understand the will of God. And we lack the skill to do it. We lack the skill of knowing God's will in the midst of our trials, and we lack the skill of actually doing it. And so James just makes this observation. You will find in your trials that you lack wisdom, that you lack a knowledge of God's will, and that you lack the skill to do it. To do what James has just said in verses 2 through 4, we are to do when we meet with trials. So that's the deficiency. But then secondly, this morning, still looking at this text, you'll notice the means. The means. Here's what I mean by that. As I've already said, James doesn't point this out as an insult, as a way to mock and to jeer and to jest. James doesn't do that. We shouldn't read James's words here, looking at Christians who are facing trials and pointing his finger, laughing, "Oh, you fools, you fools." That's not James' intent. It is not an intent to be insulting. Rather, James wants us, brothers and sisters, to simply recognize the fact. I lack wisdom. When I'm faced with trials of various kinds, I don't have the wisdom to get me through. I don't have the skill to understand God's will. I don't have the skill to walk in God's will. James wants us to recognize that. So, brothers and sisters, we are put in a place where we can now ask the question, then how do I get it? If I lack wisdom in the various trials of this life that test my faith, if wisdom is the thing that is lacking, how on earth do I get the wisdom so that I can face my trials? How do I get the wisdom that is needed to do what James says? To count all my trials as joy. How do I get the wisdom to do what James says? To let the testing of my faith produce patience. How do I get the wisdom to let patience have its full effect? That I can be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. How do I get the skill I need to face the trials? And James says in verse 5, if any of you lacks wisdom, and then notice what James doesn't say. James doesn't say, well, if you lack wisdom, go sit in a corner and think about it for a little while. James doesn't say, if any of you lacks wisdom, go buy a bunch of books, put your nose in the books, and figure out what you need to do in this situation. James doesn't even here say, if any of you lacks wisdom, run to your spouse or your closest friends and family and talk to them and get their perspective and their advice on everything. James doesn't say that. Now, there's nothing wrong with those things. There's nothing wrong with those things. Many of those things are good and they're useful, but very simply, James begins in another place. Very simply, James says, if you lack wisdom, and then here he is. I've told you before, and I'm going to continue to preach it, that this letter is mundanely practical. And here's James's practical counsel. If you lack wisdom, ask God for it. If you lack the skill that is needed to understand God's will and to do God's will, James is saying, ask God for wisdom. That's the means of coming into possession of the wisdom we lack. See, James is saying in very simple terms, brothers and sisters, that when trials meet you, and when those various trials expose to you your own lack of wisdom, my lack of wisdom, when those trials show how unskilled we are in these things, our immediate response should be prayer. To get our eyes off ourselves, to get our eyes off of our trials, and simply pray to God. To fix the eye of faith, as it were, on the throne of grace. James is saying, when you meet trials of various kinds and you come to the end of yourself and you realize that you lack the wisdom that is needed to face these trials, James is saying, then in that moment, let every cry of your heart become a petition. Let every groan in your soul become a supplication. Let every sigh of the inward man be turned into pleading with God for the wisdom that you desperately need to face every trial. It's simple. It's practical. What is the means? It is prayer. Prayer is, to put it this way this morning, it's the invisible arm that fetches from heaven God's own wisdom for us, so that we are equipped and we are skilled to be able to know and to do God's will in the midst of every trial. And I wonder this morning, brothers and sisters, I wonder this morning if I appreciate the privilege of prayer. Appreciate the fact, as the author of Hebrews says in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 20, that Jesus has opened a new and living way. A new and living way where you and I, through faith, can have access to God at all times and in all places, so that we can meet the lack of our wisdom in the midst of our trials with prayer. Do you understand the privilege of that? Do you understand the privilege that every trial that presents itself in your life does not remove you from a place where you can pray? Do you appreciate the fact that there's no trial you can face in this life that cannot be met in prayer? What are your trials? Some of you have your faith tried through health and doctors' reports, cancer and sicknesses and diseases. And James is saying, when you lack the wisdom to deal with that, ask God for it. And are your trials intellectual, challenges, struggles with the Christian faith? James says you meet that and your lack of wisdom by asking God for the wisdom. Is your trial the darkness of depression, the cloud of anxiety? James says if you lack the wisdom to know God's will and to do it in the midst of that, then you need to pray and you need to ask God for the wisdom. Is your trial of faith an unbelieving spouse and unbelieving children? James says you meet that trial and the wisdom that you need by asking God for it. Is your trial the losses of this life? The sorrows and the grief that attend the loss of loved ones, friends, and family? James says, here's what you do as you come to terms with your own inability, with your own lack of skill. Ask God for it. Whatever your loss, whatever your cross, James says, here is the first place you should go. You go to God. You ask Him, you pray, you petition, you ask Him to give you the very thing you're lacking. And I wonder this morning, brothers and sisters, and I mean this for myself too, do you really appreciate that? It's so easy when it comes to prayer to just put Christians on a guilt trip. So easy. And I don't mean it that way this morning. But do you appreciate the fact that what you lack in every trial, do you appreciate the fact that in every trial, there is still a way for you to fellowship and commune with the one true and living God? And James says, if you lack wisdom, ask God. But finally, Still looking at this text this morning, we see not only the deficiency, if any of you lacks wisdom, we see not only the means, let him ask God, but we see in the third place a guarantee. A guarantee. James writes, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God. And then James immediately adds, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given to him. James wants us to know, doesn't he, that a prayer for wisdom in the midst of trials is a prayer that God honors. James wants us to face this with tremendous and unswerving confidence. That when we pray for the wisdom that we lack in the midst of our trials, James wants us to know it is not a useless exercise to pray for it. It's not meaningless. It's not without purpose. Rather, James wants us to have a rock-solid confidence that when we ask God for wisdom, God is going to give it to us. Think about that this morning, brothers and sisters. I imagine that if there was a verse in the Bible that told you, if you want $1 million and all you have to do is pray for it, I will bet, if I was a betting man, that every one of us would be found on our knees, perhaps on our face, asking God to give us $1 million. Well, God's promised it. He said, all I need to do is ask for it, so I want $1 million. And you would probably see otherwise prayerless people become the most prayer-filled people in this world. But you know what James is saying here? James is saying, if we go back to what we read in Proverbs, what is wisdom? Wisdom is more valuable than gold. It's more precious than all the jewels in this world. And James is saying, here's the glorious confidence that as Christians you can have in the midst of all of your trials. If you ask God for it in the midst of trials, He is going to give it to you. And so it's amazing to me as I think of my own life and the various trials that I face. It is amazing how reluctant we can be to do this. To get on our knees and to get on our faces in the midst of every trial and say, God, give me the wisdom I need. Give me the skill that I need to know your will. Give me the skill that I need to do your will through the fire of this affliction. And James is saying, if you do that, here's the guarantee. God who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given to him. And it's fascinating the way that James builds this. James gives what we might call a double reason, a double confidence, or a double guarantee of why we can be confident God will give us wisdom. Listen to the way that James writes this. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given to him. And we have there, as I said, we have this double guarantee, that the first guarantee that we have, brothers and sisters, the first guarantee is the very character of God. James says in verse 5, let him ask God who gives generously. I don't want to cast doubt into your minds this morning about English translations, but the way in which James actually words this is incredibly difficult to capture in the English language. What James, perhaps a little more literally, although it doesn't always make sense grammatically, in our English language, but what James is really saying here is this: if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask the giving God. That would be a little more literal to what James is getting at here. Let him ask the giving God. You see, James purpose in saying this is not so much to give us an instance here or there that, well, God gives. He gives this, he gives that. There's a couple of actions. I'm really thankful for that. If I can put it this way, James' emphasis here is not on the action of giving, but on the very character of giving. And he is saying here, brothers and sisters, to put it this way in human terms, God has a habit within himself to be a giving God. This is, to express it this way, this is part of his character. He is the giving God. And it's a strong and potent way for James to word this. James is saying, isn't he? He is saying, when you ask, ask the God who has distinguished himself and magnified himself and glorified himself as the one who is the giving God. And of course, the Apostle Paul. Apostle Paul reminds us of a very similar truth. That truth we began our worship service with this morning in Romans chapter 8, verse 32. Paul writes that he who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also with him graciously give us all things? Of course, Paul writes that as a question. It's a rhetorical question, because the point is, if he has given us his only begotten son, if God has given that to us, then there's no way, it's inconceivable in Paul's mind, that if God has given his only begotten son as the inexpressible gift, then how will God not also prove in every little detail to be the giving God? And that's James' guarantee. God has, to speak in the manner of men, he is in the habit, he is in the business of giving. But that's not all that James says. He guarantees it by the character of God, but then the way this is worded. So James characterizes God, he's the giving God. But then you'll notice that James, can I express it this way? James characterizes how God gives. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously. Who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given to him. You see, James is saying not only is there a habit, so to speak, in God, he is the giving God. How does God give? James says he gives generously. What does James mean by that? Well, all of you have probably met those people in life who give, but they do so begrudgingly. You've probably met people who in one sense could be distinguished as very giving people, but they always give for an end, don't they? They always want something in return. Their giving to you, their charity is always, and you know the kind of people I'm talking about, it's really at the end of the day, it's a business deal. It's a transactional. If I give a little here, then I'm going to expect that in the future you're going to give me a little bit back. I'm going to give, but I'm only going to give in so much as it's going to prove to be useful to me. I will give, but I'm only going to give with strings attached. I'm only going to give with an eye to the future when you can return the favor and, in a sense, pay it back. And how many people spoil their giving and their charity with such a sinful attitude? And you see what James is saying. He is saying this, know this, Christian, God is the giving God, and when he gives generously. The word generously means he gives without an end in mind. He gives in a way where he's not giving, expecting us to give something back to him. He is, the older translations put it this way, he gives liberally. He gives generously. He gives without strings attached. He gives without an eye to what he might gain from the giving of the gift. And James says, to really emphasize this concept of God's generosity, he says not only does God give, he gives generously to all without reproach. Meaning he is not a God who upbraids the needy. Oh, you need something again? You're always asking. I suppose I'll give it to you. God doesn't give with a sneer on his lip. He doesn't give with snide remarks or passive aggressiveness. James is saying, don't you know this is the God to whom you pray? He's the giving God, who gives generously, and he gives without reproach. He gives without reproach. And James says, there is all your confidence. There is all the guarantee that when you face trials for which you become aware you are not competent and skilled to deal with, when you lack the wisdom to count every trial as a joy, when you lack the wisdom to understand that your trials produce patience, when you lack the wisdom to let patience have its full effect so that you lack nothing, when you lack the wisdom to know and to do that, James says, pray to the giving God, who gives generously and who gives without reproach. James is saying, here is where you fall back. You fall back on the very character of God. Isn't that what prayer is? Prayer, in so many ways, brothers and sisters, is falling back on the character and the promises of God. God, you are such and such. Therefore, prove to be such and such in my life. God, you have promised this in your word, so fulfill the promise of your word. That's what James is challenging us to do when we lack wisdom, fall into God. Don't let the various trials of your life chase you to run in the other direction away from God. But let them spur you and encourage you to fall back on the character of who God is. Because, brothers and sisters, he is the giving God who gives generously to all without reproach. And so there it is. James tells us that every trial's to be a joy. But James also knows, because he's a pastor's heart, that you and I lack the skill to do that. And so he says, so simply, so practically, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him. Let's pray.